Okay, and now we're recording.
And the only way to get to our house is actually
picking him up. Yeah. Hi, that's Alan Carrington from the Centre of Learning and Professional Development at the University of Adelaide. Today we are actually on campus, and with me is Linda Westfarland, from the School of Education. And we've just sat through a POGL workshop. Boggles the mind. And with me are two very special people. We have Rick Moog. Moog, is that right, Rick? From Franklin and Marshall College, is that right? And Jennifer Lewis from the University of South Florida. That'd be one of my most favourite places to live, I think, Jennifer. Welcome to Australia, guys. And somebody just tell me what POGL is.
POGL stands for Process-Oriented Guided Inquiry Learning. And it is an approach to instruction that is based on research on how students learn. It involves students working in groups on specially designed activities that lead them to develop concepts, the major concepts in a course, along with a focus on developing important learning skills and graduate attributes for a university.
Whereabouts, Jennifer, was it? Did it start?
Well, I can say this. It started at Franklin and Marshall College with Rick Moog, Jim Spencer, and a couple of other colleagues, actually.
Mm-hmm. What year was it?
1994, so long before I was actually out and an academic. I want to point that out.
Okay, I understand that. So it's been around since 1994, so it's had quite a run. What are you finding is happening with it? There's some money being put into this by the government, right? U.S. government, is that right?
Yes, we've had this kind of approach at Franklin and Marshall College in the chemistry, in general chemistry and physical chemistry since 1994, and we've had support from the National Science Foundation of the U.S. For our professional development project and materials dissemination project since January of 2003.
So what you're saying to what I'm hearing, and Linda, jump in any time, is that this is a way to help teachers modify their teaching style or their pedagogical approaches to incorporate a far more interactive way of teaching? Anyone?
I would say that's true. It's built on both inquiry learning and learning cycles, as well as just standard cooperative learning practices.
So what does a POGL class look like?
Interesting. Yeah,
That depends. Rick, why don't you talk about your POGL class?
All right. So this is difficult sometimes to talk about because one of the things we say is that every implementation of POGL is a little bit different. But essentially, the idea is that the students are working in groups of three or four, generally with assigned roles within those groups, and the instructor is serving as a facilitator rather than a lecturer. So there are activities that are structured in a particular way to lead the students to the development of the conceptual understanding, and by interacting with each other and working and discussing these questions, they can develop this understanding, and the instructor plays the role of listening to what the students are saying, at times if they get stuck, trying to figure out ways to help them get unstuck, but rather than provide the answers to the questions, provide a mechanism by which the students can find those answers themselves.
Yeah, and I guess if your teaching style was one of a sage on the stage, you're in absolute culture shock at this point. Would that be right?
If you really don't know what students are thinking about the content you're trying to teach, this is very eye-opening, yes.
Linda?
I'd like to know a bit more about the three phases of learning that we've just sort of heard about in the workshop that we just had. We talk about exploration, information, and the application process and that inductive, deductive learning. Could you talk more about that and sort of explore it a little bit more for us?
All right, so we call that the learning cycle, and it is based on some ideas of Piaget. And it was originally developed by Karplus and some co-workers in the late 1950s and early 1960s, originally to teach elementary school students science. So it's really designed for what we would call a concrete learner, somebody who has difficulty making abstractions. So it's designed to provide information or data. The idea is that information or data is provided, and then in our structure, we have a series of questions that lead the students to try to make sense of that data, look for patterns, look for trends, and that's followed by the second phase, which we would refer to as the concept invention phase, and or also it's referred to as the term introduction phase, because it's at that point, once this concept is being developed from the finding of the trend, that a name gets attached to it, so that there is some actual context for the name to be attached to, rather than it being introduced on a purely verbal level. And then the last phase, the application phase, is where that new knowledge that's been developed can be used, applied in a new context to sort of reinforce those ideas.
Jennifer, during the workshop you were talking about the impact to outcomes, the learning outcomes. Could you like to, just what is happening to the students as a result of all this? Anybody?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay, then that's fine. That means I'm not doing my job right. My question is, what does this do to the learning outcomes of the students, this change of approach? Are you getting better exam results? Are you getting higher marks?
Okay, now I understand the question. There's two things that we think can happen, and we've been okay at measuring one of them. So we are seeing that there's improved grades on standard content exams, yep, and improved performance, greater retention of students who might otherwise not pass the course. But there's other things that we believe are happening that so far we haven't been so good at documenting because they're very hard to measure. So we think students are probably getting better at communicating their ideas verbally in science. They're probably getting better at working in teams because we're providing structure for that. But those are things that weren't readily available. We can't have an off-the-shelf exam to measure that.
Yeah. What about evaluations at, what do you guys call it in America? But at the end of the thing, we have a thing called a CELT, which is a feedback form from
the student evaluations, yes, of, yeah, the
process
of the course or of the instructor.
What are we getting out of that?
That depends. In some cases, it's so very different,
yes,
that student feedback after the first experience is not good.
Yes.
But in other cases, the feedback is, wow, this is wonderful. Yes. This really fits with my learning style. Mm-hmm. So it's like anything else. There's a great diversity of students.
Yep.
And so sometimes this is hard for some students to adjust to because they haven't done it before. But for other students, it's the first time they've been able to learn in a way that they really appreciate.
I think the other thing about this that makes it difficult is that quite often the institutional surveys or forms don't really make sense in this context. So, for example, at my institution, one of the questions is, how effectively did the instructor present the material?
Yes.
Well, the instructor didn't present any material from the student's perspective, so they don't really know how they're supposed to respond to that. So that's one of the other issues, has to do with what kind of questions are really appropriate as a feedback mechanism for students.
Yeah, and a lot of it would be reluctance to change. I mean, they've come out of a different type of learning environment, and suddenly they're, you know, I can imagine the culture shock.
Putting on my lecturer hat now, and knowing that nearly all the lecturers that I know are so time poor that the introduction of a new way of teaching is quite a scary process, because it means then having to engage in creating new material and so on. How easy is it, and I suppose an adjunct question would be, how time consuming is it to develop a course based on a POGL method?
Well, in chemistry, it's fairly easy because the materials exist. Mm-hmm. So unless you want to write your own curriculum, and people do, you have some activities. Often people get started with a set of activities that are already written and then change them for themselves. In other cases, we find mostly that teams of people will work to create some activities that they can all share, mm-hmm, and use in their different settings, and that's a lot less onerous than trying to create an entire course yourself.
Right. The other thing is that what we've recognized, as I said before, every implementation is different. And so it is not a requirement to create an entire unit or course worth of activities in order to implement. And so again, if you can have a team of people and get to start with, to write a few activities to try in your classroom, perhaps supplementing the ones that are commercially available, then you'll get the feedback from the students about, and their responses to those activities provide you with a lot of insight about how to improve them for the next time around.
Yeah, which leads me to, and we've got to wrap it up soon because of time. It's on 10 minutes now, but we're going to go over. It's so interesting. The question in my mind is, other than science or chemistry, where is it really working? Mm. Have you got any examples you can sort of roll out?
Well, the question of where it's working is one that's difficult to address because, again, we don't have a lot of what I would call hard research data. But we do have colleagues who are teaching marketing, finance, Arabic, history, nursing. I guess those are the ones that come off the top of my head, who have written activities and are implementing them in their classrooms and are expressing that they're pleased with what's happening in their classrooms.
I've been talking with Rick Moog and Jennifer Lewis, both from USA, about a very interesting concept called POGL. I think we're going to pick this up with how we're going to try to implement this here at the University of Adelaide in another episode. Thanks, guys, for your time. And Linda, thank you.